You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Well, here it is. It's Thursday night. I am here in the studio at Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
So are we.
Yeah, we're here too.
But I'm not by myself this week.
Hey!
It's so good. I've got Garth and Leon here for episode 225 on the 16th of August, 2018.
Yes, by popular demand, and demand is the word, Garth and I have had to come running back.
I don't think it was demanded by any listeners, just Mark himself. Yes. He was in tears by the end of last week's show.
You did an absolute belting job by yourself, Mark. You're terribly groomed up.
Yes.
Thank you so much, guys. You're too kind. Look, what have we got on this week?
Geez, we are all about delivering and picking up, but not necessarily in that order this week, because we've got not one, but two games that are all about picking up something, taking it to somewhere else, then picking something up and taking that somewhere else. Rinse and repeat for a little while.
Sounds exciting.
You've also got some more news for us, Mark, that you didn't have time last week because you were too busy just playing a pre-recorded interview.
Yeah, and he wouldn't have had the crazy cool banter like we do. Like we'll show him some of the crazy cool banter, like, sup, Garth?
Oh, jeez, man, I'm so epic.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. How good are games and stuff?
Oh, man, they're the best.
Yeah. See what people missed, for God's sake. Just amazing talent.
Correct. So you've got that little bit of news. But apart from that, it's just generally three guys having a bit of fun talking about board games, card games, video games, potentially some role-playing games. And yeah. And Leon, where were you about an hour and a bit ago? Were you just crying in a corner somewhere?
No. I was doing that beforehand and we'll be doing that afterwards. No, right. I was at our friendly neighbourhood comic book and board game shop, Area 52, which is, of course, our sponsor this week and every week because they're lovely. And I picked up a little game there that I may have to talk about in coming weeks, which is very, very interesting.
That's one word for it.
But that will be a nice little teaser for later on to come.
So, before we do any more games talking, I think we'd better throw to a song, Mark. What do you reckon? Well, there you go. That was the very shirtless, presumably, Iggy Pop with Kill City. Not from Australia or Tasmania, but a little bit of a rock icon. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio at 99.3 FM. Now, just before we throw to what we've been playing this week, or at least lately, I need to say happy birthday, Mum. Mum, she's over in Broome at the moment, celebrating birthday 67, whoa, I think. probably call her after the show, actually, and say happy birthday. So, happy birthday, Mum. Hey, Dad. And now, what have we been playing lately, Leon?
Well, we've been playing a game where you take on the role of... Hair went up my nose. It was on the microphone. Oh, God, that's horrible.
Is that one of Mark's mustaches from last week?
Oh, that's disgraceful. Anyway, back to being professional. Note to the editor. Take on the role of a half-insane driver for the last delivery company left on Earth, the Wasteland Express Delivery Service. In order to scratch out a living in this deranged universe, drivers will deliver goods and guns between the handful of settlements scattered throughout this hellscape that you have come to call home. You'll take on missions. There'll be through a handful of different factions still left alive, and because they are the last dregs of civilization, the rest has perished.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes.
Otherwise known as...
Wasteland Express Delivery Service.
Correct.
Which is by Pandasaurus Games, known these days for Dinosaur Island, and also by the man named Jonathan Gilmore, who most people would know for one of our favourites, Dead of Winter.
Yep.
Correct.
So he's the brains behind this little operation. So basically, as we said before, it is a pickup and delivery game. That's the basic idea of it. But it's set in a post-apocalyptic wasteland. And the art is damn cool. The components are top notch. And they fit into the box They've got all little perfect custom inserts. And they fit into the box ever so lovely.
Do they ever? This is one good looking game. Especially if you are lucky enough to know someone with the skills and the ability and the patience to paint those truck minis. Because, oh my God, do they look sexy.
They certainly do. We have a picture of that on our something social media.
Presumably Instagram.
All our listeners are on all of them, I'm sure.
Yes, Instagram it is.
Anyway, so you'll take control of one of the characters working for the Wasteland Express Delivery Service, and on your turn, as you take it turn by turn, you'll do one of the relatively usual type things. You'll move your truck, but in this game it's slightly different. You'll move your truck across the grid space of this game. And now every time you set this game up, it'll be a different random setup, so different locations will be in different locations, funnily enough. And when you move, if you decide at the end of your movement to not do anything whatsoever, your next movement, you'll be able to go a little bit further. It's kind of like changing up to gears, basically. So you'll be able to speed up, and some of them get really speedy. You can go from 4 movement to 5 movement to 6 movement, which is a pretty cool thing. However, half the time you will be stopping somewhere, so you won't get to do that because you'll want to do some actions.
Correct.
But anywhere you do stop, if you stop in a certain location that has one of 3 symbols on it, you get to move the Raider trucks, because there are 3 Raider trucks on the board as well, and they are exactly what they say on the tin. They're your Mad Max style truck full of crazy people that will come and attack you.
Oh, and some cubes. They're full of cubes too, just like in Mad Max.
Yeah, well, they're not cubes. They're resources.
They're guns and food, Garth.
Yes, they're
guns and food.
Guns and food and water, the most important thing. So what you can do is these raiders might come after you, but you can also attack them. So when you attack them, you'll move into a place where they are. You'll flip over a card, one of about a dozen or so, and it'll reveal the raider you're taking on. And it just gives you a number. And you've got to roll a die, and you add that die to various different upgrades you might have on your ride. And if you beat them, great. You take the stuff out of the back of their raider truck and put it in the back of yours. Everyone loves that. Happy days. But if they beat you, you basically just take some damage on your board.
Sad days.
Because you've got a little player board that has different compartments for your truck, and you'll put a nasty little damage token on it. Again, lovely little component to show the damage on that. And eventually, they will start filling up, and you won't be able to put any stuff on there. And in a pick-up-and-deliver game, pretty much what you need.
Yeah, you don't want your truck getting too damaged, because it's where you store your fighting goods. It's where you store your actual goods that you need to take from place to place.
Yep.
It's also where you have your armor, which is kind of important as well.
Missiles, extras, all sorts of extra things you can add.
And you could also potentially have a trailer or maybe even 2 at the back.
Yes, and you can pick up, you can get some, buy some bed rolls to chuck in the back to make it a bit more comfy.
Oh, hello.
And if you do that, you can get yourself some extra characters that travel along with you. And they're your rogues gallery of post-apocalyptic crazies, but they help you out in various different ways. But the main thing you're doing in this game is trying to do missions for the different factions in the game. And they'll be after different types of cargo. So you can get them from attacking the raiders. You can also get them, purchase them from different locations on the board, because certain places will have certain things. And once you purchase stuff from there, they will get taken away and new stuff will go there. So it's all randomized. So that's one thing about this game, is that it will always be slightly different, because you've got 3 main objectives that will be out. They're public objectives. These are the ones that all 3 people can go after.
Yep.
Because I should explain this at the start. The way you win this game is by basically getting 3 advanced missions. They have stamps on them.
Contracts.
You need to do 3 of them to win the game. So there's 3 of them always out in the middle that are public knowledge that people can go after. You also get secret hidden ones from the various different factions, some of which will be these game-ending contracts. Others will be smaller contracts that will just give you rewards. And mostly they want different resources to different locations. Hence, pick up and deliver. Right. So another action you can do is deliver cargo. And when you deliver cargo, there is actually a board that is, what would you call it? It's the
it's just like the market, isn't it?
The marketplace, that's it. The demand board. So in a lot of other games that I like to do with the stock market and stuff like that, we talked recently, like in Tulip Bubble, the more stuff that's kind of goes on the board, the less demand it goes down, but then things will change as it goes along, which is pretty, in a post-apocalyptic game, is not something you would assume, but it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
If you flood the whole board with water, people are going to start...
Flood with water.
Yeah, see what I did there. People are going to start wanting food or guns, because, you know, I have plenty of water around here, but I need to shoot and eat things.
Correct. And I really like that. It's such a simple little mechanic, and it's basically every time you purchase a resource, it gets taken away and it gets replaced with something else, and once that something else is done, then it affects the little market just tiny, but it also then impacts how much you buy and sell things for, which can have really big ongoing effects of the game.
Yeah, it certainly can.
And I thought that was kind of just simple, cool, and it looked good on the table again.
Yeah, exactly. There are also 4 different locations on the board that are the 4 different raider enemy factions. You can go straight to their base and attack them personally, and they will have stronger characters there defending it than out on the raider trucks, which means you actually get slightly better rewards for it as well. And they're always on the 4 horizontal and vertical axes of the board.
Yep.
So you can always go to them. And some of the missions specifically will say, go to this raider hideout, take them down, and whatever else.
Correct.
And there's bonus actions, and most of them are used for completing missions and whatnot. And that's pretty much it. So the only variability when you come to each game is those missions that are out there in the middle that you can go after, because there's things like, one of them is just like, get lots of money and go to this location and drop off lots of money. That's pretty simple. But there are other things like a scavenger hunt. You'll put all these tokens out on the board and you're trying to find a bit of treasure, as well as another one which is about a nuclear bomb.
Yeah.
You've got to go to a location, pick up a steal a nuclear weapon after you've built a special compartment in your truck, and you've got to take that very slowly across the board to another location that you want to blow up.
Mm.
So that's an interesting way to kind of change up the way people are going about missions, because one person could be digging for treasure, someone's going after a bomb, someone's going after money. It's just crazy town all around, as you'd expect with this kind of game.
Yes, and doesn't it sound so cool?
Yeah.
Everything hurts.
Ugh.
You want to get through this? Do as I say. Now pick up what you can and run.
Yeah, thanks.
That was Furiosa.
There you go. Thanks, Furiosa.
Oh, that movie. God, it's so good. Anyway, so yes, that movie is so good. This game, how is this game?
Oh, it should be so good. It looks so good. It's got a designer that we know, and we've played games and really liked Dead of Winter, and it looks so good.
Yeah.
And it should be really good. It's not quite really good, though.
Well, let's talk about the components.
Again?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's not much really more to say other than the components are really good.
Oh, and those trays.
The trays are they're up there with your Mechs versus Minions kind of style of tray. They are spot on top of the business type trays.
Some of the best trays in board games.
Yeah, exactly. So they're great.
Yeah.
And the board is great, and the theme is great, and the idea is great.
And
however,
the minis are great.
To put it in a word, I don't mean to be insulting because he's so good at making games, but it's boring. This game is boring, and it takes quite a while. We're talking 2 to 3 hours, which you've got to compare it to, say, something like a Firefly, which is another pick-up-deliver game. It's probably the game that most people in our hobby would probably be familiar when you say pick-up-and-deliver, these days anyway. Me and Mark were talking in the pub before about things like there was Merchant of Venus, which is a big pick-up-and-deliver
really
game.
Really big in the day.
Yeah.
And
we even kind of argued that Pandemic is kind of a set collection, sure, but you could argue there's kind of pick up and deliver, because it's not really a standard bearer in our collection for pick up and deliver. It probably is Firefly at the end of the day.
Well, I remember I played a game called Auf Achse, which is a German game which won the Spiel des Jahres back in like 84, 85, 86, and someone had a copy of it when I first started going along to the Hobart Game Society. And it is literally, the board is a great big map of Germany. You have these plastic trucks. You're driving your trucks around Germany delivering boxes of stuff.
Yes.
So, you know, that was one of the early pick-up and delivers. When we were looking at the list, Leon, of course, some of the train games popped out, like Railways of the World, because those ones are more about delivering cubes from City A to City B that wants cube yellow than they are about buying stock in railways and things.
And but there were things like Keyflower and what was the other one that my mind has just gone blank?
Istanbul?
Yeah, Istanbul was another one, and, you know, that kind of stuff. But it's just, there's nothing I would say is this is the game that people know as this
kind
of genre.
Well, I just quickly jumped onto the BGG site, clicked on the pick up and deliver mechanic, sorted by rank.
Yep.
The number one, Pandemic Legacy Season 2.
Yeah. Which,
okay, which we've not played.
Maybe that's a spoiler.
Maybe there's more, more pick up and delivery stuff.
It is your
you're delivering,
providing water and goods and stuff. So, yeah. Second one, Keyflower.
Yeah.
Now, Pandemic Legacy Season 2, number 32 game. Keyflower, number 44. Then you've got Istanbul, number 91. Railways of the World, 95. Steam, 118. Then Zia, Legends of a Drift System, which... Are you going
to get? No, I've really wanted to play. I just keep not getting the opportunity to.
Out of this list, the one that I actually really, really like, apart from Istanbul, because that was awesome, was Merchants and Marauders, which we played a bit of in the last month or so, because you are essentially doing the pick-up and delivering in that pirate scene.
Yeah, but my point of bringing up Firefly is that the game that probably most people would compare it to. And Firefly is a game that I really enjoy, but a lot of people don't... Not that people don't enjoy it. I think people go, it's too long. It definitely goes on too long, which is fine, and especially if you add, like, the expansions with the other board, it probably adds more time. But I've never had an issue with it because I've always enjoyed my time with Firefly. But, again, some people have said it's too long, and they find that repetitive as well. Whereas Wasteland is... Probably, possibly even shorter, but my God, does it feel It just drags.
The missions just feel samey, don't you? Like taking X from Y to Z, and then taking Y from Z to A, and
because also something I should mention. Probably the biggest negative we have to say is that on your player board, you've got these little cogs that you put in different sections, and they're on your in a round of the game. You can put the cogs to show the different actions you've done. There are a couple of actions that you cannot do more than once every round. That does absolutely nothing except extend the game and make it more frustrating. Mm. There's no logical reason for it. We tried to find out the reason for it, and the response we got for it was just kind of like, yeah, it's just kind of the way it is. And just like, that's not acceptable, no.
Yeah, well, I wanted to talk about this, actually. Because I wanted to switch the conversation to Jonathan Gilmore.
Yeah.
Just because I've looked at his last couple of games and I've ranked him by the rank of the games according to the BGG community. Not surprisingly, you know, Dead of Winter is the standout there. It's the number 66.
Yes.
Followed by Dead of Winter Long Night.
Sure, of course.
And then we get to Dinosaur Island. Then we get to Wasteland Express Delivery Service. Now, Dinosaur Island, number 286. Wasteland Express 759. We've got Path of Light and Shadow, which I've not played. Then we've got Vault Wars.
Vault Wars is cool.
Which is a cool little game.
Yeah.
It's not exceptional. It's ranked in the 1700s. Mm. My concern, for me personally, is there hasn't been a good, really good Jonathan Gilmore game since Dead of Winter, and that's now a couple of years ago. That's for sure. Well,
I guess there are, I have to defend him. There are a lot of people that love Dinosaur Island.
Yeah, 100% right. And now, I have not played it.
I did not.
I didn't mind it, but I didn't love it either, and especially for the price point. Same as Wasteland. It's not a cheap game, mainly because those components are so good. But I've heard some people say the same thing with Wasteland. I've heard some people say that they won't play Firefly again because they'll play Wasteland. But I just don't see it.
And that's the joy of opinions, is everyone's got one. Ours is slightly different because we've got some microphones in our face. But
yeah.
I'm, you know, 2014 was when Dead of Winter came out. I want another Jonathan Gilmore game that is as good as Dead of Winter, regardless of theme, mechanics, whatever.
I was quite surprised to see that he wasn't involved with the Gen 7, the new Crossroads game.
Mm.
Now, I can't quite remember whether Jonathan was the main proponent of the Crossroads system and the rest of the game was bought by Isaac Vega or vice versa.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, for me, you look at the game, it's so beautiful. The pieces are amazing. It looks great. The theme just screams out to you that this is going to be an awesome game.
And you look at the
box. And you're going to be smashing in the faces of your opponents and then you find you virtually don't interact with them at all except you send the raiders to get in their way, basically.
Yeah, and the thing with, there's been a few post-apocalyptic games of late, but there's nothing that's the standard bearer for this kind of genre, whereas obviously in the last few years, like Vikings have gone mental. There are three or four Viking games that are top-notch, that are awesome, that are the standard bearer, whereas there isn't one for this theme, and you look at it and go, it's cartoon Mad Max.
This should be.
In a box, it should be amazing, and It pains me that it's not. I mean, again, other people have liked it more, and it could be one of those things that could bring out an expansion that does something, that changes something slightly, could change the whole game up. But at the moment, I'd recommend people try it. I don't think for the price point that is, I could say go out and buy it if you want to try it, though.
The thing I like about Firefly, and we are lucky that good friend of the show and artist of these particular minis, Aiden, is a Firefly nut and has all of the things and has the massive neoprene mat, which is the board that takes up a 6-foot table and then some. We go and play with Firefly with him with everything. Maybe it's happened once in the last 18 months, but it's an epic game day. You go there and you start early and you choose your missions and away you go and you stop for lunch and you do that. But it's fun because you're maxing out the player count and it's Firefly. Everyone around the table has that connection and we've watched the whole show.
and but it's shiny.
It's fun. This is not an epic game. Yeah. It's sort of, it's too long to play quickly. It's too short to make epically. And I guess it's not quite good enough.
Just doesn't have the variety.
No.
Look, I guess, you know, whether you're picking up boxes of plastic dog turds out of Hong Kong, or whether you're picking up boxes of guns or boxes of food or boxes of water or boxes of thumbtacks, at the end of the day, you're picking up a box and you're delivering it from one place to the other place.
Yeah.
And so you really need the theme to deliver. Okay, well, what's happening around that? What's stopping you from delivering those? What's meaning that you've got to do it in a different way? What's meaning that you've got to do it in a riskier way to have you provide the variety of that game where it's just not take go from A to B?
And also, I remember in Firefly, when you actually succeeded in one of those missions, because of the hoops you had to jump through, the getting the certain things and passing certain tests or whatever, it was always a come on, you beauty, I've done it kind of success.
Yeah.
Doing that in this game didn't feel like that at all. And one of the main reasons, we hadn't mentioned it, we completely forgot, you can't attack each other.
No.
In a post-apocalyptic game, you're limited the amount of times you can attack the raiders every turn, which makes no sense, but you can't attack each other. I mean, I suppose they say you're working for the same company or whatever, but to poke a post-apocalyptic world, that's a ridiculous thing to say.
Everyone for themselves.
And this game, you
even
see it.
Curiosa.
You see the art, you see everything, and this screams, oh, we're going to screw each other over for supplies and it's going to be amazing, and you can't do it.
No.
I mean, again, I think expansion could happen for that, but it hasn't happened yet, so we can only go what we've got in front of us and just, yeah, it's...
It's painful, is what it is, because this game looks like it should deliver so much.
Yeah.
I really wish it did. Oh, yeah. Look, I would sit down and play it again with the right group of people, and you'd have to basically role play it a bit to make it more thematic and more interesting. But you hit the nail on the head, Leon, which is the lack of interaction between the players and the limited ability to impact and steal stuff or have stuff stolen by the raiders. Yeah. That's the game there. Yeah.
You can go to the same position as somebody else. It makes no big deal. The worst thing somebody can do is sell stuff that you were going to sell so they lower the price, or go to a location you were going to go and buy something before you do.
Yep.
Kind of a bit annoying, but it's not... Ironically, it's not the end of the world, which is what it should... There we are. End on that. It's not going to get better. Done.
All right. So we are going to do that. that was Wasteland Express Delivery Service. Sorry, Jonathan. We love you. But just not this particular game anyway. This has been The Dice Men Cometh. It is Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And here's another song.
Lovely. That was Foo Fighters with Hell on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. With The Dice Men Cometh, proudly brought to you this week, as always, by our good friends at Area 52. Get in there. They have lots of nerdy stuff. They have some beautiful statues in there I was looking at earlier, which I must say I nearly bought some of them. And, of course, in the next couple of months, there is lots of magic stuff, as always, but there's plenty of more D&D stuff coming out in the next couple of months. And considering this year alone, already in August... has been the biggest selling year for Dungeons & Dragons ever.
Wow.
It's something to definitely look forward to. So go in there, check them out, and see the friendly, happy staff. Now, Marky boy.
Leon.
News time, is it?
Well, some of the most exciting news recently, over 60,000 people attended this year's Gen Con, making it the largest one ever, of course. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
So the board game bubble has not burst.
No, yet. There was no incident, no drama. Well, there's a couple of incidents. It pumped over $70 million into the Indianapolis economy. Not bad for 4 or 5 days, that's for sure. Now, there's a bit more Gen Con news, but before I mention that, Garth, you might be excited about this one.
Okay, I'm sitting down.
We've been talking about Tabletopia just recently, hoping to do some twitching.
Yeah.
Twitching by the pool.
No.
Playing games with the other Kanga judges. You're too young for that one, Leon.
Okay.
So Tabletopia is a digital environment where friends can play popular board games online. Now, until recently, you were limited to playing online through your browser or through Steam on your computer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, over 600 games were available to play through Tabletopia, but now there's Tabletopia Mobile.
Awesome.
Where you can take your online games on the road. Currently available, of course, on iPad and iOS, but Android is coming soon.
No one's got Android anyway.
And cross-platform capability is planned.
Great.
So now you're no longer tied down to your office to play your Tabletopia games.
Well, that's really, really cool. I used Tabletopia quite a lot, and I've sort of played a lot of games with particularly Australian designers.
Yeah, you've done it more than us.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
So there might be an Australian designer in Sydney or Brisbane or wherever who
just doesn't have physical copies of games that they can send to us. So we jump online, have a chat over Discord or Skype or whatever while we're playing it. And that's been really, really cool. Mm. And I did a live stream with the Brigade guys when they had their campaign going out. So it's a great system. It relies on you knowing the game. Because it is a sandbox engine. You can do whatever it is
you physically want to do.
And I know we had a bit of fun when we played Santorini as a collective of dice men.
Just throwing the pieces around the board.
Exactly. It was the best example of almost virtual table flipping that I could see. It was a lot of fun. But that's great. Tabletopia is something that the world needs so that you can interact with your fellow gamers from wherever.
That's very exciting, that's for sure. Now, Target... They are making an incredibly strong investment in board and card games. They've signed up 95 exclusive releases to draw in both hobbyists and the casual audience alike. They're going to fill their shelves with over 130 new board games. But as I said, 95 of them will be exclusive releases. They include, Leon, MacGyver, the escape room game.
Wow. Must have.
The Brady Bunch party game.
Well... I mean, obviously. I've got seven coming.
Yeah, here you go. Ticket to Ride New York. That's the new super quick ticket to ride with the subways of New York there.
Fair enough. That's cabs, isn't it?
Yeah, that thing. Yeah.
Cabs on the subway.
Cabs on the subway.
There's a game for you.
So Ryan and Marjorie Lockett, the guy who did Near and Far, Above and Beyond, and...
Above and Below.
Marjorie.
Yeah.
Which either is his wife or his mother or his daughter, I'm not really sure. But they've got an awesome new game they're doing exclusively for Target called Megaland.
Yes, yes, yes.
The Oregon Trail game,
Journey to Williamsburg.
Journey to Williamette Valley.
Oh, okay, that was a guess.
Which is, I knew there was an Oregon Trail card game. This is the third Oregon Trail game. Then as well, so those are all exclusive titles. Then they're also going to have, non-exclusively, Choose Your Own Adventure, House of Danger.
Which I've got sitting at home.
The Dungeons and Dragons starter set.
Which you've also got at home.
Yes, I do.
Game of Thrones Hand of the King.
Which you've also got at home.
And Hackathon, which I don't think you have.
I've never heard of.
No, that's right. But they are going all out to get us hobby gamers in there.
Which is a great thing, and it's good to see you can walk in America at least, into your normal everyday department store and see that they're actually going. I mean, some of those games, like your Ryan Lockett type games, are awesome games that would connect you to the real hobby, not this Brady Bunce nonsense. But on something that needs to be mentioned, though, they say exclusive. It's a little trick that the video game industry have been using for a long time. They're timed exclusives.
Oh,
as in,
is that what
they
it is?
Say exclusive. It could be exclusive for quite literally a week or a month or whatever else. There might be some that are flat out only at Target ever, but I doubt it. There'll be a couple of them that probably would have signed big money deals to make that so, but most of them would be, that's all well and good, but if we don't sell this online, we're not going to make a cent. So.
Okay, talking of big money deals, Gale Force 9 have reached a multi-year licensing agreement with Legendary Entertainment and Herbert Properties.
Yes.
You know what Herbert does?
I do.
Frank by name, to bring the expansive Dune sci-fi franchise back to tabletop gaming. Now, as master licensee, Gale Force 9 will produce original tabletop games drawing from the extensive Dune franchise, which will include printed work by Frank Herbert, Brian Herbert, and Kevin J. Anderson, as well as a direct tie-in with the big up-and-coming Legendary film, which is going to be directed by Denis, or is it Denis, Villeneuve.
I have no idea.
I want these to all be so good.
Gale Force 9.
I will never forget the summer I spent reading Dune start to finish and then to starting it again, and love that book and always wanted the movie. And now being a gamer, I want the game. I want to be able to experience universe.
You never loved the Sting movie?
I never loved the Sting movie at all.
I worked with a guy who was a massive nerd in the sense that he loved every sort of book to do with fantasy and sci-fi. Dune was his favourite film.
They tried and failed. They tried and died.
Mainly because I know, you know how when you ask somebody something and you mishear them, so you have to go, excuse me? When he told me that, it was the most I've ever asked that in my entire life, because he said the word Dune, but I literally asked him 9 times. I think he had to write it down in the end. I went, oh, Dune, right.
Yeah.
Now I get it.
And then what was he doing in July?
I don't know.
Anyway.
He's retired, so being happy, now, I assume.
Please sit down, boys. Sit down.
We are.
This one blew me away. I had not heard of this. You may have. The second title in Fantasy Flight Games' new Unique Games line. Had you heard of that?
I'm not blown away yet.
Is this the Keyforge
line?
Yeah,
well, Keyforge was the first one.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so...
it hasn't even happened yet.
That's right. So the second title is going to be called Discover Lands Unknown, scheduled for release in quarter four this year. Now, in the game, players are explorers who awaken in the wilderness with no memory of how they came to be there. They must find a way to survive, explore the wilderness around them, and ultimately uncover clues about how they came to be where they are. So this follows on the heels of Keyforge, as I said, with its unique decks. Discover Lands Unknown will be published in such a way that every copy of the game is different. Every single copy. So while it'll have some identical components, such as pawns and things, each copy will feature a random mix of tiles, cards and tokens to represent the wilderness encounters, equipment and enemies the players can come across during their explorations, and even the characters the players can play in the game are random.
Yeah, it's very, very ambitious, this whole unique thing. Yeah.
I don't know if I'm blown, but I'm interested.
Yeah.
And so it's designed by Corey Knietzke, a big-name designer from Fantasy Flight Studios, yep. And it's designed you can play it cooperatively or competitively as the game goes on, and it's scenario-driven, with each copy of the game offering a number of scenarios presented through quest cards.
Mm. Now, is this going to be a big-box game?
Yes.
So... big box, completely unique, co-op or competitive.
This blew me away when I heard about it.
Corey on his Twitter feed a day or two ago declared it the most ambitious game he's ever worked on, which he's worked on quite a few,
maybe
not groundbreaking games, but pretty amazing ones. Fantasy Flight are going all in on this unique thing. Better pay off.
From a person that works in a factory, it's going to be murder and horror for those poor people. Yeah. But it just depends on how kind of unique they are. I mean, yes, it is ambitious and amazing. The fact they're even doing it is brilliant. But if it's come down to the case of, okay, every box there's guaranteed to be seven enemies, we've only designed 10 of them, so you're going to get at least, you know, and it's just going to be slightly random that way, and they do that for a few different categories. That's not overly amazing. It's just kind of a bit odd, but either way, I'm optimistic, which is a good
thing. Well, I did watch a little Dice Tower thing of Keyforge.
Yeah.
And, you know, that certainly seems interesting, and I would pick up a couple of decks to have a go and see what it, you know, what it plays like.
Yep.
This appeals to me more just because of the big box exploration side of it. So is it Discover colon da 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 da?
Lands Unknown.
So it is potentially then Discover Universes Unknown.
They could take it anywhere.
Basically, they look at Seventh Continent and went, right, we need to do something about this.
And obviously, if you've got the scenarios through the quest cards, then more scenarios through more quest cards.
But could you then, if I had a box and you had a box, could we swap the scenarios or the quest cards around and we could essentially get another lot of life out of the game?
No, because the scenarios would be
tied into the random.
The scenarios aren't unique, yeah.
Oh, damn.
So it could just be that, you know, tiles you have could be unique.
But I look forward to seeing how it progresses.
It's going to be fascinating to see how it goes. Now, this winter, not our winter, American winter, Capstone Games will release Pipeline, a game about running an oil refining business. Now, in Pipeline, the players are executives of newly privatized oil refining and distribution companies. The players compete to operate their businesses and maximize profits by buying crude oil and refining it to higher grades to sell on the markets. In addition, the players must manage the construction of their own network of pipelines in order to refine their crude efficiently and deliver it to market profitably. Now, in the end, the player who can amass the great fortune wins the game. This is the first published title by designer Ryan Courtney. But the reason I'm excited, and I have seen some pictures.
Yeah, I've seen some pictures too, and I only realised halfway through who you're going to talk
about. Yes, it's got art by Ian O'Toole.
Ah, the man himself.
Now, it's going to be released end of this year or early next year. It does look a little bit like that. I don't know if that computer game, phone game was called Pipeline, where it's like you're joining up bits of sewer pipe. It has a little bit of a look about it, but then, you know, Ian applying his art and graphic design to the game, where the board itself shows you how to play the game. He does that so well. There's a lot of that look in this game. So I'm quite fascinated to see how it goes.
Sounds good. I was actually speaking to him the other day. Because I was just saying congrats on the whole escape plan success on Kickstarter with Vital. And he goes, yeah, Now I've got to start the next one. Because he's just started early days the artwork for On Mars, which is the new Vital Mars game. Because as you were talking about Vikings, Leon, Mars is a very hot topic.
Mars is so hot right now.
His Viking game's coming after the Mars one.
I think it's a Viking On Mars thing. I'm not
Tell him to get on
sure.
the post-apocalyptic.
A post-apocalyptic Viking On Mars
Well,
game.
I think he's yeah. you know, he's wrapped up on CO2. So that's obviously, if you lose that, that's the end of the world.
Yeah, fair enough.
So
then you need to go somewhere else.
There's a sequel.
At Gen Con, a big merger was announced between Stronghold Games and Indie Boards and Cards that's going to be leading to the creation of Indie Games Studios. So this is a combination of Indie Boards and Cards, Stronghold Games, and also Action Phase Games, which was just recently acquired by Indie Boards and Cards. Now, all these three are going to maintain their three separate brands, but all going to be under the one publisher. So that's not Asmodee.
So basically, I was going to say, they've said, okay, Asmodee's coming,
yes,
but we don't want that to happen. We need to do something about this quickly.
So that we can get more money from Asmodee when they buy us.
Possibly, yes.
But look, I mean, in Indie Boards and Cards and in Stronghold Games, there's two amazing studios. They pumped out some really great games. Indie Boards and Cards, they did Flashpoint.
Yeah, and they've done a whole bunch of the... Wasn't it Coup?
Yes, yeah.
They've been doing million different versions.
A lot of little card games, and then with Flashpoint and all that, they sort of hit that out of the park. Of course, Stronghold have just gone from strength to strength to strength.
Oh, Stephen Bonacore?
Bonacore. And he's still going to stay running the Stronghold Games brand. But I guess, I mean, for a lot of these people, it means maybe they don't have to worry about money so much, because as the bigger company manages the money, the design studios can then work on their separate projects. So interesting to see what's going to happen there. Look, a couple more quick ones. White Wolf Entertainment have teamed up with Germany's Nice Game Publishing to produce a legacy-style board game set in the world of the iconic role-playing game Vampire the Masquerade. Now, this new game, titled Vampire... The Masquerade - Heritage is scheduled to release not till late next year, but it will cover a span of nearly 700 years of vampire history, with players managing the bloodlines and immortal personalities of their clan as they navigate a mix of real-world and fictional events, manipulating both human history and vampire society as they do so, while trying to avoid the attention of the Inquisition, because you never expect them to come along.
Leon, if radio could only capture your face, as Mark was reading that out, I don't know what the radio sound for eye roll, head back.
Oh, I know everyone loves their legacy and stuff these days, and they're getting more and more. And for some people that like it, that's great. But I must say, and since I've discovered the world of Dungeons & Dragons, I just don't care about anything. I'm looking forward to Betrayal at House on the Hill. If it's done right, I think that's going to be cool as... But, yeah, if you can get yourself a good DM friend, you don't need this legacy nonsense. I was about to swear then. Stop myself.
Not Werewolf Legacy?
Well, I run a society, so I have no choice but to get onto it.
There you go.
Anyway, look, I mean, Vampire the Masquerade was huge.
Was a long time ago.
I don't know, you know. I'm sure there's still people running around going, oh, I bite you. But I don't know.
Don't ever do that again.
And finally, and I know I've mentioned this quite a while back in some news, but hey, it's coming to be now. If you've always wanted to have a more active hand in summoning great old ones instead of playing cards, moving miniatures, or listening to an app, then Arrive, a game of Eldritch Contortions, is the game for you. In August, which is now, WizKids are releasing this game of body contortions, where players need to align their bodies over Arkham in order to manifest great old ones. You know what this is, Leon?
The hell are you talking about? What?
It's Cthulhu Twister.
Oh, I'm going well with your Cthulhu Kaplunk.
Yeah, so you have one player is the cultist, the other one is the great old one. The cultist instructs the great old one to place their appendages on various spots across Arkham in order to complete a specific pattern, you know, like that five-pointed star thing, pentagram. And then, since other deities are trying to enter the world at the same time, those competing deities' appendages can be used to be part of the pattern making.
I promise that any listener who sends us a copy of this game will get a personalised live play of it with the three dice men. There is no way that I am at all interested in this game, but if someone sends it to us, we're playing it and recording it, just putting it out there.
I mean, what people do in the privacy of their own homes is completely fine. I don't think you need a mat to do half of this stuff, but if you need a mat that's washable, I assume you go for yourself.
Last week we had Cthulhu Kaplunk.
Yes.
This week we've got Cthulhu...
Twister.
What's it called? Twister. What's next, you think, Leon?
Cthulhu Scrabble. Well, which is just Scrabble, except at the end of it,
probably only get 1 point for Z.
There's that game, Unspeakable Words.
Yeah.
There's also, effectively,
what's it called? Don't Mess with Cthulhu, which apparently is supposed to be really good, a little social deduction game, which I've seen played before that I might have to get my hands on a copy of because apparently it is quite good. Was that the last thing of news, Mark?
It was.
Because I've got some more that I heard from somewhere, is that, and I cannot remember his name, even though I definitely should, being in This Is What I Do, the head of Fantasy Flight, the guy that originally designed the first Twilight...
Oh, Christian T. Peterson.
...is standing down from Fantasy Flight, which is basically the biggest board game company outside of your Hasbro and Mattel. The biggest board game company in our world, the man who invented, you know, kind of a lot of the stuff in our hobby, is stepping away from it all, which I thought was very, very interesting.
They were taken over by
Asmodee. Yeah, they're Asmodee. They're Asmodee.
They got Asmode.
Yeah, of
yes, course. They're Asmode.
All right, Mark. Got anything more for us?
No, look.
Well, thanks so much, Mark. It's good to have another 20 minutes of you. We didn't have enough of it last week. So we'll throw to a song, and then the Dice Men will come back with one more little what we've been playing lately. We'll be back after this song. You hit me once, I hit you back. You gave...
Hello everyone, Mark here with a brief history lesson about patronage. Did you know that Cesare Borgia patronised Leonardo da Vinci? We all know where that ended up. That game he made about civilization building got bastardised into Small World, a game of cuddly races cuddling up against each other in cuddly mountain caves. And Chrétien de Troyes, or Troyes as you might know him, was patronised by Marie of France. Now, I used to call her French Mary when I knew her back in the 12th century. But again, another board game that was produced with patronage. How can you support patronage these days? Well, we've got this web-based thingy on the internet called Patreon. And by giving money to the Dice Men there, you allow us to create board gaming genius by way of media content, by way of your internet radio waves into your ears. And there's more. But we need more money to do it. If you support us on Patreon, you'll get paid back 1,000 times over in the content that we create. Or just feel good that you're helping 3 poor little people in Tasmania from having a hobby. We appreciate everything you do. We love you all. Thank you so much for supporting the Dice Men on Patreon. Getting paid back does not include real money. Terms and conditions apply.
That was Kiss with a Fist by Florence and the Machine on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. Again, obviously proudly brought to you by our good friends at Area 52. Go in there and buy all your geeky stuff. I tell you what, we've done it again. Iggy Pop, Foo Fighters, Florence and the Machine, an absolute belter of a week this week. I'm sure last week was... Oh, no, last week was the lovely dedications.
That's
one to my lovely wife, which she was very appreciative of, and then one to me and Garth, which wasn't as nice.
No, because it combined two of our worst things, which was Kate Miller-Heidke and saying that you don't love us more. Especially, well, you love us more when we're away anyway.
That's right.
But anyway. No, I don't really hate Kate Miller-Heidke. We just pay out Mark because he has a very specific type of music that he listens to all the time.
An extensive Kate Miller-Heidke collection.
You certainly do. So anyway, not anything else to do with Kate Miller-Heidke, but more with picking up and delivering stuff.
Yes.
And then doing that over and over again. Now, we played a game that is not quite as large as Wasteland Express Delivery Service.
Slightly smaller.
But it does involve trucks.
It does.
It does involve picking up and delivering things. What it does do is condense all of that down into a tiny little box or even a tin, as well as the gameplay and the time that it takes to play. And we are talking about Mint Delivery by 524 Labs, which is the second in the Mint
sort of line. This was a successful Kickstarter, which, just looking at it, it funded a really long time ago. And it was one of those games where I just backed because it was $12.
Yeah, and I've gone down that rabbit hole, which I've now stopped doing myself.
Yeah, so look, me and the better part of 10,000 backers spent about $180,000.
10,000?
Yeah, but only got $180,000.
Yeah.
So that's the price point. We gave our money to 524 Labs, and more importantly, we backed Justin Blasky and his design. But essentially, Mint Delivery is a tiny little, and they say mint-sized. I guess it's about the size of your commercial tinned mints that you can buy in Australia.
Yes.
That you might keep to keep your breath fresh.
Mm. Yeah. And buy at a service station.
Exactly right.
Or a gas station.
Correct. So it all condenses down in here. In the box, you will find 9 cards that will make up the map of where it is you're going to be playing. You've got some little order cards. You've got some little wooden bits and pieces, including wooden trucks and wooden mints, because essentially you are playing competing mint delivery drivers, all vying to be employee of the month for this particular mint company. And you're going to start in the middle of the map, which is in Mintopia City.
Ha!
You will then go and do 2 actions on your turn. The actions can be moving, they can be loading your truck, they can be fulfilling orders, or they can be changing the goods in your truck, in that you can pick up a whole 4 stack of boring old plain mints. You can then convert 2 of those into a something else mint. And I think the terminology they use is sugar-free and something else.
Cinnamon, the red ones were.
Cinnamon, was it? There you go. It
was cinnamon and spearmint.
Spearmint, maybe, or peppermint?
No, I think it said sugar-free. So the point is, this game condenses your pick up and deliver down to a tiny, tiny footprint game-wise. You can stick it in your pocket. It also condenses down the game. Now, we played a learning game in less than half an hour with the 3 of us before we started a game of Champions of Midgard.
Mm.
A little bit more of a meatier game there. But it's simple.
Yeah.
And it's involving trucks, and you're picking up and delivering, and it doesn't have to take too long, and there's really not a massive excuse to not play it in about 20 minutes, half an hour. Now, it does play, I believe, up to 5 players as well.
Mm. Yeah.
It included for $12 a solo mode where you flip over the little cards that make up the board, and you're basically then inside a mint factory, and there's this automata, because I use that from the Stonemaier mechanics. Looks really, really good. It's a game.
And
it's a game for $12.
And there are some special player abilities in the more advanced games, I said, where everyone has like a different ability for your different trucks that you have.
Yep.
Mark asked me this question at the pub before we got here, Garth, and I'm going to ask that to you now. What does this do that's any different than what Wasteland Express does, really?
Well, what it does is it plays it in 10 to 25 minutes, according to the box, and...
But isn't that ridiculous, though?
The great thing is you are not bored, because...
It's over.
It's over. It's quick. You know what you got to do. You're just going from Mintopia City, and you're probably trying to deliver to Peppermint Pines or Spearmint Springs or Cinnamon Center or Freshness Falls. But everything is about 4 to 5 spaces away from each other. So every other turn you're either picking up or delivering, it happens at a clip. It's certainly not a great game. But I paid $12. Leon paid a little bit more than that for Wasteland Express delivery service. And arguably, you can put them together and compare them.
I mean, this game does what it says on the tin.
Hey!
Yeah, it's a little... But yeah, seriously, I mean, you could... The cards in this are relatively plainish. You could colour these in a Wasteland theme, put a little raider truck on there. I'm sure we could come up with a mechanic.
I could get a lighter and burn the edges of the cards and make them look all...
Yeah, if you could get like a 9-sided dice, if they exist somehow, you could roll that, and if it lands on your space, you'd lose one of your mints, if that could be your raider type thing. I tell you what, we've just made a game better than both the two we've talked about.
Wow.
Just like that.
Exactly. It was a little bit of fun, but a little bit of fun for a little bit of money in a little bit of tin in a little bit of time.
Yeah.
Ain't that bad.
No.
That's all I've really got to say about it.
We've played worse.
Have we ever? But that's what pick up and deliver games could be.
Yeah.
The essence of them is taking stuff from spot A to spot B via some potentially bad situation that is random or luck-based.
It's a mechanic everyone knows, but there's no killer game for it. There's no, this pick-up deliver game is the best by a mile. We said before, everyone, Merchants of Venus apparently is supposed to be really good, but it's a bigger game again, more expensive, it's not that wide and known and whatever else, but it's just gagging for this mechanic to get a game that everyone can go mental for, and it just hasn't happened yet.
And that plays in under 2 hours, or, you know, if you like a little mint tin,
yep,
in 20 to 25 minutes. Now, look, before we go, boys, I just wanted to mention, in case people out there who didn't know, particularly here in Hobart, Edge Radio is a not-for-profit community organisation, and no one at Edge Radio gets paid to make radio. They do it because they're passionate. No one plays more Tasmanian music than Edge Radio, and even if you're not a regular listener, can you imagine Hobart without Edge Radio? It's Tasmania's only youth media organisation and also provides valuable industry training to those who seek a career in media. If you want to subscribe and support Edge Radio, go to edgeradio.org.au/subscribe and sign up to support Edge Radio for listeners here in Hobart.
And feel free to say that the Dice Man sent you. Again, we get absolutely nothing for it except for, yeah, the old pat on the back, which we like.
And look, speaking of people supporting Edge Radio and supporting the Dice Man, thank you so much again to Area 52, Tasmania's leading pop culture retailer, where you can get your pops. I've heard that pops are going off the charts, Funko Vinyl pops.
Yes, they are.
As well as comics, books, cards, boards, books, games, puzzles, cards, games.
Stuff. And a fun werewolf event in about a month. Check on the Facebooks for that. So anyway, again, another week in the bag. Thank you very much. Mark didn't have to do it himself, which we're all, I think, grateful for.
Oh, whatever.
Which is very, very,
I was, that's for
which
sure.
is very, very nice. Again, follow us all on the socials, your Instagrams, your Twitters, your Facebooks. We post content daily on all of them, and we use different stuff all the time. You're more than happy to get in contact with us. We are very responsive. Ask the people that know us and love us. We're very nice folk. And yes, that's it for yet another week.
That's right, we're out of here.
Have a good week.
Bye.
See ya.
You've been listening to another episode of The Dice Men Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support The Dice Men, and you can too, at Patreon, for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for podcasting gold.